Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is That Twin Mama Podcast. But hey, you don't have to be a twin mom to be here. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. So whether you are new, soon to be, or seasoned parent, or maybe you just hope to have kids someday, I promise you'll find something to love, learn from, or laugh at in each episode. I'm your host, Lauren Birdie. Let's do it.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to That Twin Mama Podcast. Your girl, Lauren, here. And today we got Tianan Stevenson. She is a author of Closed Mouths Don't Get Fed, which is the recipe of getting what you want in the workplace and in life. It was just released this past year in June, and her book is really great, you all. It shares knowledge and guidance about how to be successful in speaking up, being curious in your career, but also in life. She's a mom to 4 boys. So advocacy, I think, can look multiple different ways, whether you're a working mom that is going into the office in a patriarchal system, or advocacy when you are pregnant or postpartum and getting things that you need. Advocating for yourself within your family dynamics and self-care and what you may want to do in life or needing you time. In the beginning of the year, where we are now, it is always a chance to reflect on what you want to be true, right? And coming into the next 12 months. I know it is for me. So this episode, she also is an identical twin. So yes. So this episode, we really focus on Tianan's journey and advice on manifestation, getting the yeses that you desire, whether that be in career or in motherhood. Finding your village, or we call it putting the people in your boat, of the things and the people that you need to surround yourself with, and getting those yeses. And also to all my twin parents, we spend a lot of time just talking about the identical twin sister relationship and things that she thinks have helped her be so confident in advocating for herself and individuality that her parents were able to grow and nurture in the twin relationship. As you all know, if you have twins, we often compare the two. Sometimes they get competitive with each other. So fostering an individual relationship where they're able to be their own selves, but also keeping a really strong twin bond, is something that I'm always thinking about as I'm raising my girls. So I hope you all really enjoy this episode. Let's do it. Hey, y'all. Welcome. We got a very special guest today, Tianan. What's up, girl? Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited about this one.
I'm so excited. Like, you're giving, you all, if you're listening to it, you can't see what she's giving, but like the lip, like dress coordination, it's giving all the things. So I'm excited to see your face. I'm excited to meet you, and I'm excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. Same here. Yeah, definitely dress for the cold and the winter right
now. Yes. I mean, girl, okay, you're in Dallas. How cold is it? You need to stop. How cold is it? Okay.
It's like 35, and today's really rainy. And so
it's cold.
But like this week, we've been swinging between 35 and 65. So 35 in the morning, then 65 in the afternoon, and then it drops back down.
Yo, that's why. See, like we're in this weird state, like in DC area. It's in the 30s. It'll be like a little bit less than 30 when I wake up in the morning. But it's something about the cold. I'm not built for it. I own my ancestors weren't there. I do not do well in it at all. And I'm just like waiting for the season to be over. But
yeah, anyway. I think I was built for it because I actually was born in Hartford. So
And
I lived there. So in my bones. And then I went to Colorado for our grandfather. And I was like, well, I can't get away from it.
Yeah. You've been environmentally acclimated. I feel like you had something in your bones that is ready for it.
Yeah.
So for those of my listeners who don't know who you are, tell me a little bit about yourself, your family, your upbringing. Just who is Tianan?
Yes. So the biggest thing I would say about myself is I am just ambitious. Mm. I have the saying that I am meant to be ambitious. And that is, you know, you'll see that throughout my story. So born in Hartford, raised in Dallas. I grew up with my twin sister in my house, but
you're an identical twin.
Identical.
Oh, girl. See, this is why. So are you twin A or twin B? We're going to twin B. Okay.
Yes,
sometimes you. Do you identify as like, do you know the stereotypes that come with the twin A or twin B? Like,
well, just the twin stereotypes. We always get the question, who's the nicer one? Who's the mean one? Who's faster? Who's smarter? You know, they always want to put us up against
each other.
And I'm like,
yes,
we're both smart. We're both kick ass. We're both fun. So when we're together, it magnifies a little bit more, too.
Yeah.
But we do have our separate interests, and we kind of got fed up with that by the time our senior year happened. So we were being heavily recruited for track.
Yeah.
And all of our schools were different. We did not want to go to the same college.
Really?
At all.
No.
Yeah. We were just like, okay, we're tired of being labeled as twins. We're tired of this competition piece. And so our whole list was completely different, except for like one school, University of Illinois.
Okay.
They came late in the picture. But then another school came a little bit after. When I say late, I'm talking like end of April, which is late for recruiting, but kind of normal for track.
Okay.
The last school that came in the picture was the University of Colorado in Boulder. And so we like, well, let's at least hear it out. So a friend hit me up in my Facebook Messenger. So this is dating back to 2007.
Yeah.
Just get her a message. And a friend that we met when we did some engineering program at University of Denver, he's like, hey, my coach is interested in you. Do you mind if I give him your phone number? I was like, sure, why not? It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
So as soon as I got off the phone with the coach, he gave me 85% scholarship off the bat.
Hey. Like,
okay, cool.
Yes.
And then he flew down the next week to see my sister and I run in the private school state meet. And so he came to the house, sat down with us, and at that moment, he offered my sister and I both 100% after seeing us run.
Then, like, talk about ambition. You're like, yeah, I'm ambitious. Like, what you just described, that is wild. I have so many questions. So we're going to get back to some of the twin stuff. But as you say that you're ambitious, right, and that you've done all these different things. Also, it's also very cool that both you and your sister were runners, like, and I know you are identical twins and that's made up of the same DNA, but the fact that you guys are both very excellent at that. When you think about, like, now you're a mom of how many boys do you got?
So I have four boys.
Girl by ambition.
Ambition part two. What?
Yeah. How are you doing? What if how old are they?
They're all very energetic. So that's another thing. I was like, I had to ask my dad, I was like, were we that energetic and lively as kids? And he's like, yeah. And so my oldest is Maximus. He's 11. Then we have Titus, who is 8. We have Caius, who is 3, about to be 4. And then we have Emrys, who is 10 months.
Girl, thank you for being on this podcast today.
Thank you for taking the time to be, because what?
Wow. Okay, so I'm wondering, like, mama four boys, identically a twin raised, you all made the decision, you said, like, that you want to be, like, you want to not be pinned against each other as much or find your own individuality.
Here's stickers. So even though our entire college list was different, we ended up going to University of
Colorado. How could you not? They give you 100%.
Right. And so other 100% offers, but because...
Yeah.
Knew some people that were there. We liked the coach. We thought this would be a good place to be outside of Texas and be a big fish in a big pond. We were like, all right, we're going to go here. We did have different majors. So we did have a separate life. We stayed in two different dorms our first 2 years. But then we realized we don't like other people's living habits.
Yeah.
And we understood further. We understood our living habits. So we ended up living together our last 2 years. We had a roommate also. But the funny thing is, when we were in our respective majors and going to those schools and whatnot, we really didn't talk about being a twin.
Right.
So if I'm walking from one end of the campus, which is more her side of campus, and I'm walking across to the business school, I would sometimes get stopped and people are like, wow. Hey, did you do that assignment? And if I didn't have time, I was like, oh, yeah. And just picking up other times. If I knew I had a few minutes to chat, I was like, hey, I'm actually her twin. And they're like, whoa.
What?
Like, she got a twist? I'm like, yes, I'm the other one.
That is wild.
It happened at least 2 or 3 times a week.
That is wild.
Not know who we were.
Yes.
There's worlds. And so it was just funny that was a reoccurring happening. Thing. But it also showed that, hey, we were actually just trying to grow into our own.
Yes.
And it gave us that opportunity to do our own thing, even though we saw each other every single day for practice.
Yes. 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 That's so fascinating, too, because I think all twins are different, obviously, and some choose to never be apart. Some choose like they want to do their own thing. And I admire the effort, at least, to find your own identity, individuality as you grew older, right? And even thinking about your book, which we want to get into, Close Not, Don't Get Fed, and finding your voice and advocating for yourself. Do you think that being a twin, let's talk about the book first. So you were the author of Closed Mouths, Don't Get Fed. Tell our listeners what that's about and what inspired you to do that.
So I released my book this summer. It's called Closed Mouths, Don't Get Fed, The Recipe for Asking and Getting What You Want in the Workplace. Yeah. So pretty much I give the secret sauce on how to overcome the fear of asking, how to turn the no's into yeses, how to earn our voice and speak up for the things we want, whether it's the promotion, the raise, the special projects. And just being ambitious and going after whatever the ask may be. So I used my career as the muse and used the stories from it to show like, hey, I lived it. I coach and mentor other people in my workplace and outside my workplace and seeing people get success. So I was like, yeah, I just want to help people. This is a good way to just give back and to empower others. And I'm just excited to say I actually finished.
I love that you did. And I love the title because I feel like any Black mom that's listening or maybe like any brown, I mean, that's what people said that a lot. Closed mouths don't get fed. Growing up, that was like a staple saying. So I love it.
Yeah. My dad was the one that said it to me all the time.
Okay.
He's saying, closed mouths don't get fed. If you don't tell me what you need, how am I supposed to help?
Yes.
So I saw myself really living it and then push myself to live it even harder. And realize, oh, I'm getting the extra assignments or I'm getting the client to say yes to my ideas a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then I had to start to unpack it. And I was like, so what am I doing right the first time? Because I didn't have to struggle for my promotions. Every time I asked for the promotion, I got it. And
wow,
then I was like,
yeah.
How did I do that? And then I'm like, oh, I met the certain leaders, you know, early on and made sure I connected with them on a regular or asked for feedback or I'm pushing these type of ideas. And it really dawned on me when I got promoted to manager. So It took me less than 5 years and I already had 2 kids at the time. Wow. And I was like, how did I get this and not struggle or not feel like it was a hard challenge?
Yes.
And so I just started writing the different things of what that saying meant to me and then just roll it out. So it's been a great journey. And the fact that I've been young in being able to have the career and the motherhood and being a wife and be able to do all the things I want. It's definitely not easy, but it's all the things I want and that I find as my passion.
Yes. I love that so much. And I think about how, and maybe this has been your experience, but I'm not sure. It sounds like your dad saying this to you, like with like a seed that was planted. But I'm also wondering, I just see this with my girls. I've talked with other twin parents where there's like a confidence that you have to have when you're advocating for yourself. And I see a lot of confidence in twins. I don't know what it is. They're like the most social. Everybody wants to be their friend. And I thought that was just my girls. When I talked to other twin parents, they're like, no, they're kind of like the leaders and like they start playing together, like kids will be doing parallel play, but they're already like interacting, doing imaginative play, right? Because they have their own partner all the time. Do you think your experience as a twin has shaped your confidence and your ability to advocate for yourself or maybe has it presented a challenge because you're always, you know, to come as the twins? How has that impacted maybe your inspiration to create the book that you created and on self-advocacy?
Yeah, so I totally agree. I think being a twin definitely boosted that confidence.
Yeah.
I think early on, like you said, that individual play, but that twin play in being able to find our own identity. My parents told me that when my sister and I were probably like 1 year old, we had our own language.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's time, da, 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 da. And then we just see us, they'll see us laughing. And they, what are they saying to each other? So that was happening for a couple of years.
Yes.
They're just us, and we were in our own world. And I think the fact, too, with us being twins is very unique.
Yeah.
So we're always in that spotlight in a way, or this extra attention, because it's like, ooh, twins. Yeah. Let's find out what these twins are about. You know, there's always this gravitation.
I have a question. What's the most ridiculous question? Because we get ridiculous questions at twin parent. What's the most ridiculous question that y'all have gotten? I know there has to be something.
Oh, there's so many. It's like, oh, if I pinch you, does she feel? Like, that's
girl, what?
That's always one of them. Back in the day, you know, us being in the 90s, we got compared to Tia and Tamara.
Right. Everybody did. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was you, Tamara?
Wow. Like, they're characters on this TV show. But yes.
Yes. And we could identify with them because of how alike they were in a way and their physical appearance. Because with them being light skinned, black women and us being very similar, we could identify with them a lot.
Yeah.
We always get asked who's faster, and we came up with some creative answers for that.
Well, I'm curious. What was like, give me an answer.
So we would say, it depends, and we'll say that together. And then we'll say, all right, take Quinn is faster. Anything under 400, she's quicker and has quicker foot speed.
Yeah.
I have more endurance, so anything 400 and over, I would rock that. So we knew our expertise.
Yes.
So she was great being the lead leg on the relays because she could get out, position us correctly.
Yeah.
And then with me being on the end, I had a strong finish. So we knew how to answer there.
Yeah.
That's the other one down.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Not put the other one down, because at the end of the day, y'all can fight. I mean, at least my girls can fight, but you don't come for either one of them. Like, that's not.
Yes.
That's
fought too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then at the end of the fight, we both would get spanky. Right. And we'd be fighting. I'm like, what?
So nice. Oh my God, that's so funny. Do you think there is something that your parents did? Because a lot of my listeners are twin parents, but to encourage individuality or encourage like any separation, or still, like, obviously the bond of a twin is like the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed. Like, I think nothing could be stronger. I just am glad I get to witness it. But anything would be, the only thing that's better than being a twin mom would, I think, have a twin, to be honest, because the bond's so strong. But like, was there things that your parents did or didn't do that you think impacted like your ability to be individuals, or something you really valued in your upbringing having a twin?
I would say with school, we had the opportunity to be in separate classes.
Yeah. Okay.
Adult, and we ended up figuring out how to have our own set of friends.
Yeah. Okay.
Friends that, like, okay, they know us both and they know the difference. But let's say by middle school, I had my own set of best friends. She had her own set of best friends. So that helped. Well, we actually got our own rooms.
Yeah,
really nice. I would say we're about 12.
I didn't think about that, because I just think about my girls always being together in the same room. But yeah.
Yes. I think they asked us random time, like, hey, do y'all want your own rooms? And I think we were content with being in the same room. We had bunk beds and knew where everything was. And so we were able to decorate our rooms the way we wanted to.
Wow.
Yeah. And so she went with the Asian theme and went with red and gold and the little symbols and things like that. I don't know why I went with pink and orange. My favorite color was orange, but I think my mom was trying to make me a little bit more girly. So it was cute. She did a great job and had pink and orange flowers and the pillows to go with it. She did a really great job.
That is so
and
funny.
So we grew up in the same house for 12 years. So it's like we got to see the entire house transform over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were in a lot of activities together with in church, with the school. We did karate together. We did piano together. We were in band together, but different instruments. She played clarinet. I played the flute. But I think we chose to be in a lot of things. It didn't feel like, oh, I had to choose something because of my twin doing it.
Right.
Like, oh, we both like it. Okay, cool. Let's go.
Right. Right.
And I think we also leverage each other to push ourselves.
Yes.
So there was a time in high school, we were so serious about track. We were running all year round.
Wow.
And so after cross country season, there will be a time from like November to early January, we would train by ourselves at the school.
Mm.
Would text us the workout. We live about 40, no, like 40 to an hour, depending on traffic.
Yeah, right.
From our school. So by the time we got back to our house and get to the track practice, it was already dark. So to make best use of time, school at 4, catch straight to the track. We got the track workout on the phone. We hit the times and whatnot. We text our coach like, hey, here's the results. But I don't think we could have done it if we didn't have each other.
Yeah.
Well, to run by yourself and to push yourself to elite times is very hard. And I even had to do that specific part in college because in the fall season or the fall workouts, I had a specific class on Tuesday and Thursday that got out an hour into practice. So I had to start my practice by myself.
Wow. Yeah.
Thursdays during the off season were the hardest workout.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So imagine. I think I was prepared for that because of how I trained in high school. But it definitely pushed myself like, all right, it's me against the clock.
Mm-hmm.
I was aiming to leverage my sister as a measuring stick, especially after I had foot surgery.
Oh.
So I had foot surgery junior year in the fall, and I had to start training in November to start competing indoor in January. And so I had my twin sister who was in full shape. She ran cross country season and eliminated. And I'm like, okay, on a broke toe that just got fixed.
Girl,
some ground zero. So I made it up in my mind.
Yeah.
She is where I'm supposed to be.
So
each workout, I will push myself, you know. So if we were doing a 500-meter workout, it would take me probably by the 450 to catch her at the beginning.
Then
I saw myself getting closer and closer. And I was like, once I can pass her at the 300, 250 mark, I know I'm in shape because I'm a strong finisher. That works. My strength works. Oh, she can have that all day.
Right.
As long as I finish at the same time or ahead of her, if it's anything 400, 500, 600, I'm in shape. By the time January came, I was able to pass her at the 250 mark.
Wow.
I'm there.
Wow. That's so
it so worked.
I wanted to quit.
My very first workout after surgery, my coach put us on this hill. And I talk about this in chapter one in the book. There's a hill on the Interstate 45. They don't let us, they close it off now.
Okay.
But everyone in the 1990s, early 2000s, they know about this hill.
Yeah.
And it's about 70 meters and it's very steep.
Wow.
So my coach told everyone else, like, hey, you guys got 15 going uphill. He told me I had 20. I was pissed. I was like, what? I'm just getting back. Today is my first.
And when you say 15 or 20, what does that mean? Like 20?
So going uphill, running uphill.
20 minutes.
15 reps.
Oh, dang.
So 15 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Nice. And you had to run uphill, jog back down. So you didn't even really get a rest.
No.
And then run back up. And as soon as you get back down, touchdown, you go right back up.
Bye.
And I wanted to quit after that. I sat on the hill. I was like, oh, I finished the workout. But I was like, oh, I'm done. Oh,
yeah.
Do I really want to, fight this and try to get back?
Right.
Right. And then I heard my coach, he yelled with his big voice. He's like, Joy, why are you? So my nickname is Joy.
Okay, got it.
And so I was like, oh.
Wild. So what made you want to quit? So you said this is in chapter one of your book. And I imagine, like, when you think about self-advocacy in your career or in anything, it feels a little uncomfortable. It feels like maybe you're at the end of your rope and might want to quit your job unless you get this thing you want. Or if you don't speak up, to me, when I think about, like, even the workplace where I don't think I really spoke up for myself half the time, but even in motherhood, like speaking up when I might need something, it's happening in moments of, like, strife or, like, you need something. And so you either say it or you don't, or you might quit, right?
Yeah.
How have you had any experiences like that? I know you have in your career and you skyrocketed, right? But in your personal life, as a mother, as a wife, has that shown up, features and parts of your book? Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So I would say just that instance of wanting to quit, but ultimately deciding to keep going.
Yeah.
It showed me that I always have a little extra left in the tank.
Yeah.
And that I can always get up. And so, and then also the fact of running hurdles. Oh, I've fallen. Oh, and I've fallen in big races. I've fallen in championships. But one thing you can say about me, I always got up and finished.
Yeah. Wow.
So I carry a lot of that track mentality into my life, into this place. Even when I was pregnant with the first baby and I'm going through the mommy and you know, delivery class.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in track mode. I was like, okay, so while I'm in actual labor, I'm trying to get to 10 centimeters. Okay, so it's like the 400. Oh, the race is going to be great, but that last 120, so if I'm at 8 centimeters, it's going to feel like crap. And that's what's called labor. Okay, now it makes sense. Okay, but I just got to push through, finish strong, and we get to the end, and there's a baby. So that's
I love it.
That's about labor.
I love it. Whatever works, girl.
Right. And that's like, okay, all I got to think of is my breathing and my form. So that's how I thought about it.
Yeah. I love that. And your form. There you go. Whatever you got to do. Whatever you got to do. I imagine.
But even carrying that into the workplace.
Yeah.
I had to figure out self-advocacy the first month of work.
Yeah.
So when I became official at Accenture, a month later, I thought I was pregnant. I was like, oh, what does this mean? I'm going to have to use benefits. How do I use that? Oh, I'm trying to be a consulting, but we're supposed to travel. What does that mean?
Yeah.
I had so many questions. And my first boss, she was a woman and she was a mother too, but I still had my insecurities. So I was like, okay, what's she going to think? And you know, I'm thinking as just a career person and, you know, thinking as my leader. But she took that leadership cap off and put on the motherhood cap. And she, when I told her, and I told her early, because I was like, all right, do I tell her early? Do I tell her later? Or when I start showing? I was like, I probably don't show early. You know, I'm 23, a year out of college.
Right.
Still on track, shade. So I'm like, yeah, I'm probably going to show like next month.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, let's just have this conversation, get it over with. So it's like pushing myself past all of the discomfort.
Yeah.
And that's what track does, because if you want to get the faster times, you always have to push past your threshold.
Right.
And push yourself to another level of pain.
Yes.
If you want to see the result. So when I had the conversation with my boss, I thought it was going to be a 15-minute conversation. She sat with me for an hour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It answers a lot of questions and insecurities. It made me feel better. It was like, hey, whenever you need to go for your appointments, I know you can make up the time. you know, you can adjust your hours for that day or do extra hours of work on a different day.
Yeah.
Well, she was like, yeah, if we have more work by the time you get back from maternity leave, we could talk about potentially bringing you back.
Yeah.
So she calmed all of those insecurities and unknowns for me. But it started with me just being vulnerable and being willing to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And I was able to thrive even when I was pregnant. So I got to be on that project the full 9 months. I worked until I delivered, which was kind of yikey.
Don't know. You don't know. Yep. Been there with my first.
So I literally was still at work feeling the labor pains. I was like, okay, I think I may need to go home a couple of hours and gave birth the next, you know, at 3 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
And then took my maternity leave, and then I was able to come back, which was great because it was a local project. So in the world of consulting, a lot of times you travel, especially pre-pandemic.
Right.
But I was local. So I was like, cool. And it was only 15 minutes up the street. So it was very much, you know, a great alignment for where I was. And I was able to stay at that project 2.5 years altogether, which is great. A lot of projects, 6 months, a year, 3 months. And I got through 2 promotions on that project. I also got to jump into a leadership role.
So every time when you got a promotion, where, like, did you always have to ask? Or?
So not exactly ask. It's more let people know.
Yeah. And how does that look like? Like, give me for someone.
So the way to advise people is like, hey, if you're trying to go for a promotion this fiscal year, you need to let them know at the beginning of the fiscal year, not a month before the discussion is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
They don't know what type of progression you've made.
Right.
You tell them early, they can support you. They can guide you. They can say, hey, you're on track. You're performing well. You're doing this. Or, hey, you're missing the mark if you're trying to at the next level. You should
take
extra responsibilities, or you should adjust this, or be a little bit more client facing, or leading meetings, or doing X, Y, Z. And you can make that pivot, you know, the first month versus, oh, you missed the mark. Oh, yeah, you're not ready.
Right.
And it's performance discussions time. So I advise people, hey, if you're trying to go for promotion, have that discussion as soon as you get the new role. Have a plan. Work with your leadership.
Yeah.
Plan and have frequent conversation so you can make pivots, or you know you're on track and you know what to expect when performance outcomes come.
Yeah.
Because what kills me is I'll have people who ask for like quick mentorship, and they're like, hey, I tried to go for promotion, but I didn't get it.
Mm.
And then I'll unpack what that means. It's like, all right, tell me your promotion story. Tell me what you told your leadership.
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh, I didn't think I had enough people I was leading, or I didn't do this. And I'm like, well, actually, you did have a promotion story. You just didn't know how to tell it.
Tell it.
Know how to advocate or get the right sponsorship. So there's a lot of things that I try to unpack with people.
Yeah.
And encourage or give them that confidence, because I didn't have that confidence with my
action.
I was like, oh, I'm going to come back from maternity leave. I should wait a whole nother year and prove myself. But it was my leader. She was like, oh, no, you're already performing at this level. We're going to go for it now, even though you're about to go on maternity leave.
I love it.
And I was
that's amazing.
I was like, you think I could do that?
Right. That's right.
Hey, you believe it? Let's do it.
Yes. I love that. And that's amazing when you have, especially as women, we come up against people in power that get it and really want to advocate, and they see you're in their fair, and they want to help you. Have you had an example when that wasn't the case, or you felt gaslit or something where they were like, no, and you knew that you should have?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason is I'm a very extroverted person.
Yeah.
You know, love people, love being around people. So I always talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And early on in my career, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know I was getting sponsors. I didn't know I was getting mentors. I didn't even know what that really was. Maybe 3-4 years later.
Yeah.
But because I made sure I told people who I was, what I was about, what my goals were, I somehow always had the right people in my boat.
Yeah.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
And it all started with the network.
Yes.
And sometimes I didn't realize how we leveraged people. You know, like there was one project, 4 years of my career, and one of the leaders on the project, he sold the work, but he wasn't leading my work. But he knew my people lead or my internal manager. So he, because of that, I think he wanted to take a little extra interest into what I was doing. And so he would just ping me sometimes, send me a quick message like, hey, how's the project going? And I'll give a quick update. You know, it's like, hey, had a good meeting with the client. We're setting these reports up. We're doing this. And he'll give me some extra tidbit that I didn't even ask for. So I'm like, he must be a sponsor.
Yeah.
And it's all worn good stuff that helped me show up better.
Right.
Like, I think I'm going to keep him close by.
Right.
Just continue to leverage his ear. And so I would proactively ping him and just send him ideas or, hey, can you take a look at my presentation before I present?
Right.
Or what do you think of this? And so on that specific project, I leveraged that project to get promoted.
Right.
And I asked him like, hey, can I get your support for my promotion? I did that with him and three other leaders because I didn't know who would be in the conversation for me.
Right.
So I was like, all right, at least all y'all going to know my story.
Yeah. Somebody going to know. Yes.
Want to speak to it.
Right. That's so interesting. And it makes me just think about how important, like, whether it's in work and it's your sponsors or your mentor or your manager, whether it's at home and it's what we call a village in motherhood, like having people in your corner that might be more of an expert, but believe in you is so fundamental because without that, like, they just probably shouldn't be in your ether. The fact that you're like, yeah, I haven't had that experience is probably because you're very intentional about the people you surround yourself with, the people that you asked advice from. And I just think about that in parenting. Two, it's so important who has real estate in our brain and who's telling us what we can do, who's not, like, if you say you have a problem or something and they're like, no, just deal with it or live with it, shut up about it. Like those, that matters a lot and surrounding yourself with that. And I'm thinking about like you're a mom to four. That is wild. Has there ever been a time where you've had to advocate for your kids? Whether in school or whatever. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what that looked like?
Yeah. So with my oldest, we had to advocate for his EAP. So his special learning abilities.
We call it something else here. IEP. We call it I. But anyways,
EAP.
Yeah. Something like that.
So early on, we knew that he had some speech impediment. You know, he's very talkative, but you can't always pick up what he's saying, you know, at 8 years old.
Yeah.
We put him in speech therapy to just like get some outside of help before we went to school and just kept with it. But then when we went to school, I was like, hey, I need him to get tested.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got him tested. He got his special privileges for speech. But I asked probably in kindergarten for him to get tested for dyslexia. So I saw early on, I'm like, it's writing like 15 to 20 letters backward.
Right.
You know, really?
Yeah.
Like, there's something there. And they told me like, oh, you have to wait till second grade. I was like, okay, sure. Right. And so that they like, oh, it usually corrects itself. I was like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm dyslexic, but I never was tested.
You know? Right.
In college, I saw it show up more, which was near.
Right.
So we get to second grade and now it's the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. So, girl, I resonate with this.
And I was like, all right. And then we switched schools. So I was like, all right, let me push this issue again, see what they say. And they were like, okay, well, yes, let's get them tested. But this is what's going to have to happen. You're going to have to bring him up to the school and, you know, wait for him. And then he can go back home to finish school. I was like, that's fine. And then because of his lack of attention, I think it's supposed to be like 3 trips. It was 7 trips.
Yeah.
So I had to just stay on top of it. I was like, all right, when the next time we got to go back to the school? All right, we're there. We'll be there at 1 o'clock. I'll wait for him however long. Let's get this on paper.
Yeah.
What he
needs
the right help that he needed. Because in second grade, he was reading at a kindergarten level. And I think because of the dyslexia, the dysgraphia in the speech, that slowed his progression with reading, with writing, and his motivation to do all of that. So now with him actually getting the help that he needed, so they gave him the plan and all of the resources, he started to do a little better. Mm-hmm. So third grade, now we're back in class full time. And they'll pull him out for certain services to work on the dyslexia, to work on the speech. But everything else, he's in his regular class. And they're saying, they're like, okay, he's really good at math. He's really good at thinking and comprehension and things like that, even though he is a little bit behind on reading. So we went out and got him extra reading tutoring on top of that. All right, we're not going to let you fall further behind.
Yes.
So by the time he got out of elementary school, he was at reading level. He was in the upper percentiles on the state test. And now he's in middle school and sixth grade. He likes to read. And I'm just right there is a miracle.
Yes.
The amount of effort to just for him to sit there and read to me, he did not want to do that.
Right.
Of just him trying to hear himself say the words. He didn't like that. Now he can read more advanced books. He can read chapter books. He's thriving in social studies. English is his highest grade now.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm like, never in my life would I thought gotten here.
Yeah.
But I knew what my child needed. And as a mother, you have it in your gut. It's like, no, I know what needs to happen.
Yes.
I'm going to see it all the way through, whether, you know, high water or whatever.
Yeah.
I want to get this done because I know it's right.
Yes.
And so with that being said, now I got to go through similar stuff with my 8-year-old, not the speech stuff, but the dyslexic.
Yeah.
And get him tested for that, but then also tested for talented and gifted. So different spectrum.
Right.
He gets so bored with classes that he is disruptive.
Right, right.
I mean, was just like, okay.
Yeah, right.
It's paying attention and making sure that we follow through because we know our kids.
Exactly.
We know exactly what they need. Even if we don't, we leverage that village to say, hey, is it crazy or is something off?
Okay. Right.
Let's talk word. Have you been through this? Okay, cool. Yes. Give me your doctor's name or give me the name of this person and work it from there. And then like Titus, my 8-year-old, I'm hearing so much about his athletic ability that I'm like, okay, my husband and I are like, okay, we're going to start giving him some of that private training.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. His sports IQ is of like a 12, 13-year-old.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's like, all right, now we're going to start thinking through the positioning, the competition level, putting the right opportunities. Because he was in the 6U flag team last year. He scored 40 touchdowns.
Wow.
For the year. Like every game, 3 to 4.
Yeah. Okay. So
BS in numbers.
Right. Yeah.
That's wild. Track of it, he made a bet or more of a deal with one of the other coaches, and the coach was like, I'm gonna give you $3 for every touchdown you score.
Right.
Oh, and at the end of the season, the coach was like, originally I was gonna do $10, and I'm so glad I did it,
right? Be $400 out.
Goodbye.
That's like I'm loving that you're naming this because it sounds like as a mom and as a career person, a wife, all the things as a twin, there are moments where you have a gut feeling on something, whether that's like what you were talking about with your twin with racing. You're like, I know this is where I'm supposed to go and I'll get there. But my gut feeling is that I will get better, as I don't need to like necessarily quit. Right. When you're talking about the workplace, you're saying like, you know, I'm surrounding myself with certain people and I have a gut feeling on which people I should be talking to get to where I need to be. With your kids, you're talking about how I know there's something with my child and y'all ain't really trying to work. And so I'm going to find a different way to get the services that I need for my child. Right. And I think with mothers, we do the same thing, even from birth, from pregnancy. Sometimes we have a pain or something happening after and they're like, nope, you're fine. Like when I had my son, I was 23. And the language we have around postpartum anxiety and depression, that did not exist. Like the type of symptoms and things that people look for. Now we have more language where people aren't like, just deal with it and gaslight you. It's like, no, your gut feeling matters so much. So it sounds like your intuition, your confidence, and your gut feeling has been like a driving force in your ability to show up for yourself, to show up for your family, to show up for everything. When you think about the book, Closed Minds Don't Get Fed, I kind of like, I said that I grew up hearing closed minds don't get fed, but they also heard a lot of be seen and not heard, right? Don't disrespect, like don't say things. Exactly. Be like quiet. Like even if you know that there's something could be wrong as a child, especially you don't have that confidence to necessarily speak up for what you want. And I love that your dad embedded in, you know, speak up, right?
Yeah.
For parents. And I know a lot of millennial parents, I feel like deal with this. Like, I don't want to rock the boat. Okay. Like I'm going to, you know, whatever. What advice would you give them? Or is there a specific chapter in your book that you think that they should read to finding that inner confidence that you were just naturally born with? To be able to start self-advocating for themselves and for their family.
Yeah, so I have chapter 2 that's okay. Totally to that, the fear of asking. And I go through 6 different fears that I created in my head. I was like, all right, what are the things that I went through and overcame to get myself there? So, you know, the fear of rejection, fear of stirring the bones, or the fear of just not knowing how. So, you don't know what you don't know. So I went through some trainings, you know, leadership trainings that got me to find my voice, get past, so, you know, the ageism type thing. I was like, oh, I'm 25 and I'm leading a team. Or I'm the youngest one at the table. So I always had this imposter syndrome from when I was, you know, the first 5 years or so in my career. And when I took the training, I was like, and I had other women telling me, do not let your age define you. Like, you're in the room. There's a reason you're in the room. You're bringing value. And so it helped me work through that little voice in my head that's like, oh, you shouldn't do that. Or, oh, why is this? And just calm that voice, work through it, and know that the voice is like, oh, it's trying to protect me. But like, oh, I got this though.
Yeah.
And it's trying to be that warning sign. And so I talked through that in the chapter where it's like, all right, how to identify it, but then work through it. Because a lot of times we let those fears be the reason why we tell ourselves no before we even to get to a yes. So I tell people, like, be the first person to tell ourselves yes. Give us the chance to actually try to get the ask out there. And then when I realize, when I go through that myself, when I actually ask, I get what I want, or I get the information I need, plus some. A lot of people are way more willing to help if you just speak up. And then because the person knows you, it's a lot easier to get that yes. So I kind of go through a little bit of all of that, even like the village piece, there's a whole chapter in chapter 6 called All Aboard and getting people in your boat.
Yeah.
And so I asked a lot of questions to a lot of leaders throughout my career. And when I first became a manager, I saw this really sharp managing director. I was like, he asked a lot of good questions. Let's just get a one-on-one with him. And just pick his brain. And I asked him, you know, what is a piece of advice that you wish you would have known as a first year manager? He said, get people in your boat. And so I started to think about, like, all right, when did I have people in my boat? And I became even more intentional on who I have in my boat, not just falling upon people,
Just
like targeting people. And that came into really good use.
That makes so much sense. And I'm even thinking about like all the things you're saying and how many parallels they just have in like motherhood and parenting. Just yes. The fear of asking, the fear like just being like you're an imposter, don't know what you're doing. You don't want to ask because you don't even know the question, but you're afraid to even voice it, right? The people in your boat being the people in your village, right? When you had, when you became a mom, the people in your boat that were there before in your village ain't there no more. So it's like, you're like, I got, you know what I mean? So just everything you're saying, I hear it. And there's so many parallels to being a parent as well. And it just goes to show that like, no matter what sector in life that you're in, whether you have kids and you're listening to this or you don't, finding the people to put in your boat and not in the fear of the fear. No. Say goodbye to that, right? Your inner voice has to be the yes first. And like, that's coming from what you were even saying, like the confidence. And I always say your words have so much power, and like what you say to yourself internally or out loud or about yourself, it really has power. So ensuring that that inner voice is a yes person. Talk to yourself like you talk to your whatever people online. They're like, oh, girl, you're so cute. Love this life. Like, yes, queen. You know what I mean? Be that person for yourself. Because it's like three that I think grew in you to make you such a boss and ambitious in almost everything that you touch. And I just love that.
Yeah.
I just love that.
So, and I have different things and quotes on my mirror to just that. Yeah. You know, one of them is, everything is okay. Just plain and simple. Everything will be okay. Another one was focus and finish. And that really pushed me to finish the book. So there's a lot of different quotes. And I'm going to go through the same exercise this month of what is my theme for next year?
Yes.
And so one of the themes is vision. So really charting out what the future vision of everything beyond the book, because I got a lot of other follow-up things that I want to do. And then just making sure I take care of myself too in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, I love that. And when this will air like in the beginning of next year. And so if you are listening to this and you haven't, I'm a big believer in vision boards. I honestly, like, I make them every year and almost everything comes true in some way, shape or form. Be very intentional about what you're putting on it and what you're saying, because it could show up in different ways. Like you could say, you know, I want alone time. And then you just like you alone and something like you could be intentional. Like it be like, I want to be happy versus I want like bigger boobs. And then you just get pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like
it's also like the art of manifestation.
Yes. Yeah.
And envisioning. So I talk a little bit about that in one of the chapters, you know, small section.
Yeah.
But when I ran track, I had to visualize my races. So I would visualize the race like 10 to 15 times while I'm coming up, because I'm like, okay, it's a lot windy today, or it's cold, or the lanes are wide. So I am prepared
for
whatever may come. And that's the same mentality I carry in the workplace. When I go to meetings, I'm prepared. I'm ready for whatever questions my team may have or questions my client may have. And be able to say, hey, we got this in the bag. We know what we're doing. We're going to hit the timeline.
Yes.
We'll deliver it with quality.
Yes.
So being able to manifest it in the world, but then more importantly, in your life, and build that confidence in knowing, oh, I can get there. I can accomplish losing so much weight. I can accomplish so many hours of sleep. I can accomplish starting a business and do it in a certain time frame. And then also how to understand how to handle defeat or misstep or fallbacks and be able to say, hey, I can still get up. This is the end of the story.
Yep.
This is not the end of the path, and be able to turn those no's into yes.
Yes.
And that's how the whole chapter on the art of no.
Yes.
I through all of this, I was like, what can I give to other people to just get them the extra knowledge? Because the word no, I look at it as it's no dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Why did they say no? Maybe it's no, we don't have enough resources. Mm-hmm. No, the timing is off. No, you asked the wrong person.
Yeah.
Who you thought was an influencer is not the right person.
Right.
that same ask, but ask it to the right person and you can get the yes.
Yes.
I've seen it so many times in my career.
Yes.
Right. Ah, that's what that means.
100%.
Get that yes.
Yes. And it's interesting because, like, I always pray that whatever is really not meant for me, please miss me all the way. So even though the no might be the wrong person, maybe there was somebody else, that no was meant for you to do something else. Maybe it's ask it differently, but maybe it was to do something completely different where you didn't realize you were supposed to be doing. So understanding, I love that, the art of no. As we come to the end, is there anything, what would be like the last piece of advice that you would want listeners to know with all that your life experience has had to offer, everything that has gone into your book? What is like one final piece of advice if you want listeners to learn anything from what we talked? I know we talked a lot today, y'all, about so many different things, but what would you want to leave listeners with?
So I have a saying that I usually talk through when I do speeches is be intentional, be curious, and be fearless. Mm. And that really unpacks the essence of the book, because if you're intentional, you will actually push yourself to make action. If you're curious, that will also drive you into action.
Yeah.
Because you'll say, huh, that movie was really good. How much money did it make? And you go pick your phone and go to Wikipedia and see, like, oh, okay. So it will make you take little steps.
Yeah.
Because your curiosity will drive your thoughts. It will drive just thinking, like, hey, let me look that up.
Or
let me go find something out about it. And then being fearless, it takes being bold, it takes being courageous to go after it. Whether you know what you're doing,
or
it's just I just want this, you know, whatever. Because of that fearlessness, it would drive you into action. And so I think those three mantras or phrases, thumbs up, closed mouths don't get bit.
Yes. I love that so much. And it also just reminds me of like inner child, right? Like children are so fearless. They're so curious. You know, that learning, like that's why you see children become like super Star Trek athletes or gymnasts that just jump off of things because they ain't know they could get hurt. They haven't felt, you know what I mean?
So I just lie.
They just try. They don't know what they don't know. And so like finding that part and the magic and the curiosity, it's like lights my soul up just to see them experience that. So I love what you're saying with intentionality, curiosity, fearlessness. Find that little inner child, girl, if you're listening to this, and grow her a little bit in this coming year. Tiana, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the cast today. Y'all check us on the next episode.
Peace.
And that's a wrap for this episode of That Twin Mama Podcast. But before you go, let me tell you how you can keep this village growing. First things first, are you subscribed? If not, what are you doing? Hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening so you never miss a new episode. We're streaming on all major platforms, so let's make it official. Secondly, let's stay connected on socials. Follow us on That Twin Mama Podcast on Instagram for short form relatable content, and follow us on YouTube at That Twin Mama Podcast for entire episodes in all of their glory. And lastly, and this is a big one, if you liked what you heard today, please leave a review. Your 5-star love means so much to me and the team behind the scenes and helps us to keep going. It also helps us to find parents like you who need to listen to these episodes, which mean the world. So until next time, take care of you, take care of your crew, and remember, you're doing an amazing job. See you soon. Peace.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.